welcome to a special Tuesday afternoon edition of The Grueling Truth. I'm your host, Mike Goodpaster. Of course, I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Matt Andrews-Gavage. Matt, I know this is a special hour, a special episode for you, one of your favorite players on one of your favorite teams.
Yes, it is, Mike. As a lifetime 49ers fan, it's an absolute thrill and an honor to welcome our guest, 49ers legend Roger Craig. Roger, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on your show. Really excited to be on it.
Well, we really appreciate you taking your time out of your day to be on the show.
And thanks for being such a great 49ers fan and a fan of mine, I guess. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Now, I have to tell you this real quick before Matt asks the first question. I'm a Cincinnati Bengal fan, so you basically ruined my childhood, Roger.
Oh, my gosh. I know where this interview's going. then.
No, I don't even like to talk about that stuff anymore. I still have nightmares about you catching that pass, you know, on that last drive.
Yeah, I only ruined one part of your life, you know, because the first Super Bowl, I wasn't on that team. But I watched it, and you know that's when the 49ers kind of built their dynasty back. You know, 2 years before I was on the team. So it's kind of tough to see us play, you know, the Bengals twice in Super Bowl and we win both times. It's kind of crazy.
Well, Roger, I was wondering if you would share with us your experience playing for the 49ers during really what was the golden age of the franchise.
Well, it was a great, great experience for me because, you know, when I got drafted, I didn't realize I was going to be the focal point of the system. You know, when I got drafted, I know that the 49ers threw passes to the running backs out of the backfield because I watched them win their first Super Bowl. And the most yards the starting running back had was like 500 yards, but he caught for another 300 or 400 yards in reception. So I'm like, wow, you know, why are they drafting me? Nebraska, we never throw to the running backs and we didn't have a passing game. So I'm like, they draft me to run and block, you know? So I said to myself, I'm like, well, I'm going to show them that I have skills. I'm going to work on catching the ball. They didn't even know I was going to even do that. And so when I came to the rookie camp, the first couple days, you know, they threw me over 100 passes. I only dropped 2 passes. One was over my head, I couldn't catch, and then the other one was low in the ground. So Bill Walsh kind of, his eyebrows kind of lit up to see that I could catch the ball, you know, and so I was a big part of their offense ever since that weekend, you know, that they implement me into the passing game. You know, Joe Montana, you know, threw a lot of passes to me during the mini camps, and then some of the receivers kind of helped me out on how to run routes. And yeah, so, you know, being a fullback blocking and running, I was surprised that, you know, that they're going to make me a receiver coming out of the backfield. You know, because they traded for Wendell Tyler to come on the team that same year. So, I thought that he would probably be the guy, to catch the ball, but they ended up using me, and we just created history after that. You know, throughout the 80s, you know, I dominated as far as, you know, running backs, you know, catching the most passes 5 years in a row, and I led the whole league in receiving 1 year with 92 catches, you know, and no other running back have done that, you know. So I'm really, really blessed that, you know, they trusted me and trusted my vision, you know, because, you know, I wanted to show them a little more, not just, you know, just to be a runner and a blocker. I wanted to show them that I can be an all-purpose back for that system. So it was my doing, you know, and my vision, you know, seeing, you know, what I need to do to better myself as an athlete.
Yeah. The 1984 49ers team, for my money, is one of the 2 best teams I ever saw. I mean, the backfield was unreal. Wendell Tyler, yourself. Was Tom Rathman there at the time?
No, Tom wasn't there. Tom didn't come to he came in 86. So he came, and that's when Wendell Tyler got hurt in 1986, Bill Walsh moved me to halfback, you know? And so Tom was the fullback at the time, and we came back the next year, and you know, we almost made the playoffs again. Well, we made the playoffs, but that's the year the Minnesota Vikings they beat us pretty bad. Anthony Carter had a big game that day. And then the next year, Bill said, "Well, you're going to be our starting running back, so you might as well get ready." And so the next year, I trained my butt off. You know, I had to lose about 15 pounds. I still had fullback, you know, weight on me. I was weighing 225 at the time, so I wanted to lose 15 pounds so I could feel like a running back. And that same year, I ran for 1,500 yards and was the MVP of the league that year. Caught close to 70 passes, and we went on and won the Super Bowl. We beat Cincinnati in that Super Bowl that you were talking about.
Yeah, I remember that. You don't have to laugh when you say it. It wasn't that funny for me, man. I'm a little kid sitting in my room crying because of this.
So I went, well, if it's any consolation, I was very happy.
So I went from fullback to running back, you know, and I made fullback, you know, I made the Pro Bowl at fullback when I did the 1,000-1,000, and then they moved me to halfback. I made it the halfback of the Pro Bowl. So I made it in two different positions. I don't think too many other running backs have ever done that before, you know. But, you know, being the first player to rush for 1,000 yards and receive for 1,000 yards, that was kind of the start of the brink of, you know, the all-purpose back in the 80s. And you look at the players today in the millennium, you have to be able to catch the ball. If you're playing for Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Peyton Manning, you know, Aaron Rodgers, you better be able to catch the ball out of the backfield, you know. So it shows you that, you know, our system is still relevant in today's, you know, in today's football, you know, in the millennium. So, I mean, they're using our West Coast offense. So Tom Brady needs to give us some residuals from all the success he got over the years, over 13, 14 years. He needs to pay up. He needs to pay up because he definitely used our system. That is the West. That's Bill Walsh's system. Trust me, at his best.
What were some of the differences in playing for Bill Walsh and then later George Seifert?
Well, they both are great great coaches. You know, George Seifert never really got the credit that he deserved, you know, as a defensive coordinator. You know, Bill Walsh, you know, with the West Coast offense kind of hogged up, you know, all the stories, you know, the great comebacks. But our defense is one what wins championships. And so George Seifert was always kind of quiet, never really, you know, voiced his, you know, his opinion. He never, you know, bragged about how good he was. And when he got the coaching job, you know, he showed his skills, you know, as far as, you know, how to win and how to bring a team together, you know. And, he won his first Super Bowl, you know, in New Orleans. And then he comes back and win another one. With Steve Young, you know, so it shows you his versatility as a coach and how, you know, he can adapt to any situation. And he built a great team that year that won the Super Bowl with Steve Young. He's really a pretty good, he's a good coach. I really respect him a lot.
Yeah, I think he really gets a bad rap just because he followed Walsh. And everybody says, well, anybody could have won with that team. But the fact was, he was perfect.
He was perfect for
that team because he put the players first.
Yeah, and he put the players first, and the most important thing is that, you know, he kept the family together. He didn't disrupt the organization. Sometimes you get a new coach in, they disrupt the organization by making all the changes. He kept it the same. We kept running our same West Coast offense. You know, we practiced the same. You know, we did everything as if Bill Walsh was standing right over, you know, watching us. And we pulled together. You know, when you have an organization like that, players got to step up and take ownership of your team. And that's what we did. You know, the coaches only can do so much. The coaches can't go out and play for you. You have to take ownership of that team. You know, you have to have leaders that are going to disrupt things to make it a positive, in a positive way, you know, of how we work, you know, and the way we practice, the way we conduct ourselves, the way we stick together in the locker room. You know, we have to have those tough leaders that's going to step up to the plate and not be afraid to take the ownership. And we had leaders to do that, you know, Ronnie Lott, you know, Joe Montana, Rice, myself, you know, Haley. You have all these guys that would just, you know, take control of the organization and take it to the next level and play with the urgency of not just being hungry. Hungry is not good enough. Hungry, you get three meals a day. You miss breakfast, you have lunch. You miss lunch, you have a huge dinner. But when you're starving, you do whatever necessary to get the job done. The players I played with, we were starving to get the job done. And that's the difference. You look at the great players that won championships, the iconic guys like, you know, Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, Wayne Gretzky, LeBron James, Kobe Bryant. These guys starve. And that's the kind of attitude you got to have when you play on a team like the team we had. We didn't want people that were hungry. We want guys that were starving, that was going to take each play to the next level. And that's what you got to have in today's, you know, sports. You know, the athletes have to distinguish what that means, hungry and starving. And they would be a better player, and they'll create their own legacy if they understand those two terminologies. Because hungry, everybody's hungry. But who's the guy who's going to be starving? See, that's the key. That's the message that guys got to take.
Definitely agree with that.
And not just in sports. In business, same way. The same thing. You know, I work for a software company. I'm vice president of business development for Tipco Software. And we sell integration software. We're big in fast data. We have tools to dissect, you know, fast data, you know, with our analytics, and guys have to come in, people have to come in, you know, to work, and they have to be starving if they want to have success, because it's easy to kick back and relax and coast and, you know, pretend you're doing something, but, you know, if you're not making the impacts, you know, we don't need you, you know, you got to make impact. You have to make impacts in life, you know, you have to find a way to make the world a better place. What do you do to do that? How do you make impacts in people's lives to change the world and make it a better place? I try to do that every day. I walk out of my house, or you know, I'm in front of public, you know, the public. You know, if a fan come up to me, I'm going to make sure they have a great experience when they meet me. I'm not going to just shake their hand, walk away, and not give them something. I want to give something to them because I appreciate fans, how much they support me throughout my career and cheer for me and zero below temperature weather or 95 degrees, you know, out there sweating, you know, watching, cheering for us. So I got to give something back. I got to make them feel good, make them feel like they are special. You know, I don't care if you're a homeless guy on the streets to the CEO of the biggest company on the planet, you're going to get the same respect.
Yeah. Well, that, talking about impact people have on other people's lives. In 1983, when you were drafted and went to the 49ers, who was the man when you got there that most impacted your first season or basically the rest of your career even in the NFL?
Well, when I got drafted, and a media day when they brought me in, one of the old-time players on the team was Hacksaw Reynolds. I don't know if you remember Hacksaw Reynolds. But
yeah,
he
played for the Rams before tonight.
He played for the Rams, yeah, linebacker, yeah. And he was kind of like my mentor, you know. I met him, he said, you know why we drafted you? I'm like, why? You know, I mean, you know, he said, to help us get back to the Super Bowl. So I'm like, wow. I mean, as a rookie hearing that, I'm like, oh my gosh, I got some work to do. I gotta get working here. I gotta show these guys that, you know, they didn't make a mistake. Because my last year at Nebraska, I didn't have a great senior year. I got hurt, and I didn't play that much. I only played half the season. I only had like 500, 600 yards. And so I had to prove to them, you know, being their first pick in 1983, that it wasn't a bust. And so the one thing that I did was I kept my mouth shut. I just didn't didn't try to force, try to be this rookie coming in, thinking he hot shot, you know, coming in with a Ferrari, you know, I bought a Volvo, you know, real conservative, coming from the Midwest, being from the Midwest, saving my money, you know, doing all the right things, and just kept my mouth shut and worked my butt off. And I can remember in workouts and practice, I used to sprint every play out. I learned that in high school. You know, my high school coach taught me, you know, run it out. You know, so we had to run it out like 80 yards every time I touched the ball. So I was used to that. I did it in high school. I did it when I was at Nebraska, you know. And so I brought it, that same mentality to the 49ers. And they were like, who's this rookie think he is, you know? I can remember people laughing, you know, like, come back, Roger, come back. I'm running 80 yards down, you know, every time I touch the ball. They're making a joke out of it. But guess what? I changed the culture, baby. I changed the culture. Bill Walsh had everybody doing that. And then every draftee that came in, Jerry Rice included, and all the rest of them, they had to run it out just like me. So, you know, when I got that respect from the players, you know, and then I stepped on the field and we almost went to the Super Bowl my rookie year, they changed that whole mentality about, you know who I was as a player, as a rookie, and they accepted me. You know, that's all I wanted, was just to be accepted, and I didn't create any havoc, any, you know, conflicts or anything. I just did what I was supposed to do, and we almost went that same year. Washington Redskins beat us with those two phantom pass interference calls that they called on our defensive backs, because we were definitely dominating the second half. We had tied the game up 21-21, and the momentum has shifted, and we were on our way. You know, if we got the ball back, we were going to score, man. And for some reason, they let the boys are off the hook. They called two phantom pass interferences, and next thing you know, we didn't go to the Super Bowl that year. But that next year, wow, we had one heck of a year. We're 15-1. The only team that beat us was Pittsburgh Steelers, and we faced Dan Marino in Super Bowl 19 here at Stanford University, and which the Super Bowl is going to come back to San Francisco this year. Well, down Santa Clara rather. At the new stadium. So it's going to be kind of cool to relive that, you know, Super Bowl back in the Bay Area again.
Well, speaking of reliving, I was not expecting to relive the painful 83 championship game.
Matt talks about that all the time, Roger.
Oh, yeah. The Redskins?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Two phantom interference calls.
I couldn't believe it. And they made, you know, and ESPN, they did a story about it, you know. I mean, it's like, you know, I guess they didn't want two California teams playing against each other. In the same Super Bowl, you know, because the Raiders crushed, you know, the Redskins that year. Yeah, but, you know, it's, you know, it made us a better team and made us be a little more wiser, you know, and just made us hungrier, you know, starve. I mean, we were starving to go back, rather, you know, and we made it happen, you know, 15-1 the next year, and we won the Super Bowl. And you know, it's so funny. I cherish, out of all the Super Bowls I won three Super Bowls. And the one thing I cherish the most is I never, ever, ever missed a playoff in my life. I don't know what it feels like to be on a losing team. I played in 11 consecutive playoffs, not just with the 49ers, but one with the Raiders, two with the Vikings. For some reason, I'm a magnet to come into teamwork, you know, and I really cherish, you know, it takes teamwork, you know, to make the playoffs. It's not an individual thing. You don't break records and get a chance to play in playoffs or whatever. It's a team thing, and I've always been a team player. I've always been a team player from high school. I learned from my high school coach. There's no I in team, you know. Team is bigger than you, you know. So I always knew, you know, about that second element of, you know, giving back to the team and doing whatever it was necessary for my team to win. You know, I can remember with in Bill Walsh's system, you know, we had this certain play that we ran. And a lot of running backs, they don't like to get hit on play action fake because they don't have the ball. But I get pissed off if I didn't get hit. That means I failed that play. I messed that play up. you know, because that play depends on, we all are an extension to each other, you know. So Joe Montana, when he fakes to me, I got to give a good fake, you know, so the defense think I have the ball. If I don't get hit, that means I didn't do a good job. So I'm hurting Jerry Rice or John Taylor if I don't fake well. Because when I fake well, the whole defense collapses thinking I have the ball. And it puts the safety in a bad situation because if he takes two or three steps, he's beat. And so I had to sell that fake every time, and I took pride in that fake. And Montana and I used to work after every practice, you know, just working on the play action fake, you know, part of our system. That was a huge part of our system, huge. And Jerry Rice used to always give me $100 every time, you know, he would win. I would win, rather, you know. Yeah, so, yeah, but it's that connection that we have. It's team, you know, unity, you know. And so I understood, you know, what my roles were. We all have roles that we play as individuals on teams. You know, you have to know, you have to just, you know what your role is and your mission is, you know, as a player. And if you know what those are, you're going to have success. You're going to create your own legacy. But if you're selfish, that you don't want to fake, oh, it's not going to me, so I'm going to have a horrible fake, then you're letting the team down. You're letting 10 other guys down. Because at the end of the day, all we look for is the scoreboard. Did we win or did we lose? Or did we just score a touchdown or we didn't score a touchdown? So that's all we got. And business is the same way, you know. At the end of the day, did you make your numbers on your quarters, you know? Or at the end of the day, how was your revenue at the end of the year, you know? You know, you get judged by all those things. So, yeah, I mean, teamwork is everything to me, you know. And I carry that through my business, you know, world right today, you know. So nothing changes.
Right.
Well, you brought up Joe Montana there. Go ahead,
uh-huh. Matt. No, you go ahead, Mike. You're going to ask Joe Montana.
Okay, you brought up Joe Montana there.
Uh-huh.
This is what I want to know, all right? We're talking about the drive that destroyed my childhood.
John Cannon.
But what was it like to be a part of that drive in that huddle, going down in the last 3 minutes and 22 seconds to win the Super Bowl?
I just want to tell you, we weren't like freaking out, okay? I mean, you know, we weren't stressed. We've been there before. Bill Walsh prepped us. That was a big part of our system, the two-minute offense. We owned that. We took ownership of that. You know, when we did practice, you know, I mean, we had a special period just for a two-minute offense. We'd go against our number one defense, and we'd crush them every time. So it was an attitude thing. 2 minutes, oh, we love it. Come on, we know exactly what we have to do. It's just like being on Broadway, you know, and we all had scripts that we had to, you know, deliver, you know. Or another way of analogy of who we were on that drive, we were just like a jazz band. We all had instruments. And to make beautiful music, you need a conductor to kind of conduct the different instruments to play the music. Well, Joe Montana was the conductor, and we were the musicians, you know, having our different, you know, tools out there playing the music and creating great harmony, you know, because that West Coast offense all came together, showed us who we were at the time, this unselfishness, you know, because every skill position player on that field touched the ball on that drive. It wasn't just one guy. Jerry Rice wasn't the only guy. I wasn't the only guy. Joe gave everybody an opportunity to touch the ball on that drive. As we driving down the field, we had to go like 94 yards down the field, right? You know, with a couple minutes left in the game. Joe stops and he sees that we're kind of getting a little uptight. He stops and he looks over to the right. And he said, "Hey, isn't that John Candy over there? I'm like, "Wait a minute, Joe. I mean, why are you looking at John Candy? You know?" But he wanted to distract us so we wouldn't be so uptight, you know, and just relax. And we all laughed and stuff, you know. And we went on down the field. The guys who were really stressed was Cincinnati Bengal. We could see that their faces were stressed out. We weren't stressed. The clocks was running out, but we knew exactly what we had to do. And we just went on down the field and scored a touchdown and won the game. It was an amazing comeback for us, but you know, Bill Walsh had put us in this position so many times. So, you know, it just shows you about teamwork. That's why I was talking about how I enjoy the teamwork. See, those memories will last a lifetime. Just to know that I was in that moment and in the heat of the battle and how we all came together, how the West Coast offense just flourished in that time, you know, with a couple minutes left in the game. Yeah, it was probably one of the most exciting comebacks in a long time.
Yeah, I wasn't
ready when I think.
Real quick, before we get to Matt's question, we've got about 4 minutes left in the live show. So if you're listening now, and about an hour after the show goes off, you can hear the last 15 minutes, which will be on the podcast. The complete interview will be there. So go ahead.
How about Borland? You guys haven't talked to me. You haven't asked me anything about Borland. You know,
the list, Roger.
You got to give us a second here. I was just wondering because, you know, he's from West Coast.
I will ask you about
played
that.
Played at Wisconsin. I love that kid, man.
You know, when I think about
the
your career,
the thing that impressed
Roger,
me about him was the fact that he's given back 3/4 of his signing bonus he got last year.
He's given back $463,000. That shows you his, you know, that he's really dedicated to retiring. You know, I would find all kind of ways to hold on to that money. the way I would give it back.
What do you think about his decision?
Well, you know, it's to each his own. You know, I mean, if it's his passion, you know, and he has to feel comfortable going out there and suit up and play against these unbelievable athletes out there. I mean, it's a different world. When you step on the football field, the NFL, I'm telling you, man, it's a different world. You got to be ready. You got to be mentally ready. The way I train in the off season, I train my butt off just to be ready to take those hits. You know, that's why I trained the way I did. I only took 2 weeks off in the off season. And, man, you know, you got to have your mind and body prep and ready for the contacts. And I think, you know, Borland just, you know, he just, you know, he saw a lot of other players, some of the players that I played against, you know, a lot of them lost their lives, you know, they committed suicide. And a lot of them, like Tony Dorsett, has, you know, dementia, kind of, you can't remember certain things. And I think he had some concussions before Borland, and he just wanted to look at, he wanted to have a healthy, second life, you know, besides playing football, but have a, you know, a healthy life, you know, for himself, you know, and so he might have got spooked a little bit, you know, but kids are a lot smarter now. But back when we played, they felt that, you know, guys felt like they were invincible, that they can play under any stand. I mean, they can play with concussions, play with everything. We weren't too bright, you know. So today, you know, they have a lot more, they have a lot more tools to work with, you know, like scanner, they have sensors that can measure the hits that you might take from your defenders that hit you, you know, like they got this technology called Zebra technology that can create that can, you know, can find all the different measurements of auto rhythms of hits that you take, and they can measure all those type of things and say, hey, maybe you shouldn't go out and play this week or next week or it's just amazing tools that we have now to help the athletes to be better athletes and to perform at the highest level. And so, you know, I wish him well. I think the kid, I was hoping that he's going to come back next year and be an all-pro linebacker because he could have got Rookie of the Year this year. I swear, he's that close to getting Rookie of the Year this year. You know, he had so many tackles, and he led the team in tackles, and he was like the future. And I was like, wow, man, we got a good linebacker there. You know, I'm saying to myself, you know, and then he retired. That was a shock to everyone. I'm like, wow, unbelievable. But I wish him well. I wish him the best. And I take my hat off to him. You know, it takes a lot of courage to do what he just did, you know. And hopefully he'll come back. Because I love watching him play. Because he plays the game as if he's starving. He's not one of those guys that are just hungry. He plays like he's starving. And I like that mentality.
Well, I know Matt said that you guys talked yesterday, and he said that you mentioned Walter Payton was one of your mentors when you were younger. What were some of the important things that you learned from being around Walter Payton?
Well, first of all, you know, he was like my idol as a kid growing up, and how blessed I am that I got the opportunity to start in the same backfield with him at the Pro Bowl. You know, I was his fullback. When I did the 1,000 in 1985, I made the Pro Bowl, right? You know, and Walter was my mentor. You know, I mean, I hung around with him that whole week while we were at the Pro Bowl. I was like this little chihuahua, and he's this bulldog. And I'm jumping around trying to get all the information I can from him. We got to be pretty good friends, and he sent me workouts, and he just told me, you know, things I need to focus on, like taking care of my body and, you know, getting the massages, doing all the things to better my body so I can get the most out of it. And he said to always take just 2 weeks off in the off season. That was the best advice I could ever take from him, because a lot of guys, they don't understand that. Your body's on a calendar. So when you take like 2 and 3 months off just not doing anything, it's hard to get your body back up to the optimum best, you know. So he said, just take 2 weeks off and ease into your workout and do some endurance running, you know, and run the hill. And so I did that, you know, and that really helped me a lot, you know, physically and mentally, you know, knowing that, you know, I was in the best shape of my life, and I owe it to Walter, you know. And Walter always told me to hit force with force, attack the defender, you know, that, you know, a lot of guys, running backs, take a lot of, you know, hits, because they absorb, they're not physical. They're not like a violent runner. Now, there's guys that are like violent runners in the game today. I like Adrian Peterson style, and I like Matt Forte style a little bit. You know, they're kind of aggressive. You know, and Aaron Foster's another good one. You know, these guys, they're big and they're physical, and you have to be, you know, if you want to, you know, stay in the game for a long time, you have to kind of dish out the, you know, the punishment, you know, because if you keep absorbing that, you're going to, you know, find your way, you know, you won't last long in the league. So Walter always told me to hit force with force, and Walter wasn't that big. He only weighed 185, 190 pounds, but he ran like he weighed 240. You know, the guy was amazing. You know, only missed one game out of 13 years. Wow. You know, I have mad respect for him. I know he's up in heaven, you know, having a good time up there. But, man, you know, I wish he was still here, because, you know, he can really help a lot of kids out there. I'm going to keep, you know, delivering the message, you know, that he helped me with. So hopefully some kids out there are listening, you know. Never be satisfied. You know, always work to get better. You want to work on your skills and work on the little things. The little things is what makes you great. It's not the big things. It's the little things.
You know, you mentioned, as you were talking about Walter, you mentioned the hill. Mike knows this. I talk about Joe and Ronnie, yourself and Jerry a lot. And, you know, when you mentioned the hill, I always think of the NFL Films spot on Jerry running the hill. But
I think you had a little part
in that.
Yeah, no, that was my hill. Okay, Jerry just ran with that. Okay, I was running that hill 2 years before Jerry even came to the 49ers. I introduced the hill to Jerry. For some reason, ESPN flipped it and said it was his hill. Like, this is Jerry Rice's hill. No. It was my hill, baby. Go to Yahoo Sports and Google up Roger Craig and Jerry Rice Hill. See who's on there. just check it out. Just check it out. You know, I was the one who kind of gathered the players together. You know, before Jerry was on the team, you know, I had guys running the hill. We all lived in the same community. It's this town called San Carlos, California. And the hill was in San Carlos. It's called Edgewood Park. And it was more of a trail. It's where people took their horses and you know, walked the trails. But I turned into, well, I got introduced to the hill by Dr. Art King, Dr. Arthur King. He was our orthopedic surgeon. Then he left the 49ers, and now he's with the San Jose Sharks hockey team. So he kind of introduced the hill to me, you know. And then I loved it so well that I shared it with my other teammates who lived in my community. So I used to go around to their homes and wake them up 5 o'clock in the morning. Their wives get pissed off at me. I'm throwing rocks at their windows, waking them up, you know, getting them. Eric Wright was one that had a hard time getting up every morning. But Eric Wright, Keena Turner, Mike Wilson, Jeff Fuller, all those guys, we all came down. They came down the hill to run at this park where I was introduced to. And then Jerry, when he came on, I said, Jerry, you know, in the off season, you got to train, man. You got to work out. You know, I said, why don't you come run this hill with us? And he ran the hill with us, but he never came back. He stopped. I mean, he got halfway and then he left and went back. So I begged him to come back. So he never tells that story. He never tells that story. I bust him out in public all the time. Wherever we at, I tell that story. I said, man, Jerry, I had to beg you to come back to that hill, you know. and then he came back, and then it was history after that. He bought into it. You know, you have to buy into it. You know, you have to, you know, and just like, you know, buying into the West Coast offense, you can't be selfish. You gotta have roles. Everyone has a different role that you play, and we all, you know, took those roles to the next level, and that's what we did in our off-season training. Barry Sanders trained with me one his rookie year. He came out. You can ask him. You know, Barry Sanders. He trained with me. You know, Eddie George came out and trained a little later. You know, Ricky Waters did the hill. You know, oh my gosh. So many guys came out, and Barry Bonds, you know, I mean, we had a little bit of everybody running the hill, man. Trust me, man, it was amazing. It was amazing.
We got about 6 or 7 minutes left here, so why don't you just tell us a little bit about what you're doing today? And I know that you're running a marathon this weekend, I think Matt said.
Yeah. I host the Rock and Roll Marathon. I'm the founder of the race in San Francisco and San Jose. San Francisco is this weekend, and we're going to probably have close to 12,000. You know, they don't like us. I mean, we probably can do 30,000, but the city only want to have a certain amount of runners on the field, on the streets, because, you know, they have a city ordinance that we have to be off, you know, the streets by 10 o'clock. You know, so, you know, we start about 6 o'clock, the race, early in the morning, so we can get people off. But yeah, it's really a great run. We have rock and roll bands every mile. We also, you know, have a big concert after the race, you know, at the Civic Center, you know, right down there in San Francisco, and it's just a fun event, you know. It's good for people to help motivate themselves and to achieve things, you know, on their own and not having someone help them. I don't have an offensive line out there blocking for me. I run it all 13.1 miles, and I ran over, I would say, over 35 marathons in total, you know, half and fulls. And it's my passion. It's what I love to do. And San Jose is another big one that I love hosting. We had over 20,000 last year, and this year is going to be our 10th anniversary. So I'm really looking forward to that. It's the first week of October. We have people from all over the country. I mean, like 25 different countries that come over and run these races. And it benefits the city, you know, because the total impact, you know, the hotels, the restaurants, you know, they get a lot of money, you know. So it's millions and millions of dollars that's been exchanged over the weekend. And which is great for the city, and so we make the mayor look like he's the king, but I'm really the king, you know. But you know, the mayor, we got to make him look like he's doing something really special here, you know. But you know, it's my vision that I brought to the Bay Area, which, you know, they love. And if you Google it up, you know, the Run Rock and Roll, you can see and put my name by it, you know, and you can see that I'm a big supporter of it, and I'm really looking forward to having fun this weekend.
Well, you know, I Googled you yesterday and came across an article about how you were trying to get like some kind of a record time in a marathon.
Oh, yeah.
A guy ran alongside of you.
Yeah, I was in Chicago.
He wanted to run with you. What's that?
Yeah, I remember that. I was in Chicago running, you know, the Chicago Marathon, and basically, you know, I'm running a good pace. And some guy just came out of nowhere and just came up beside me and said, can I run in, can I finish the last 2 miles with you? My family's going to be at the finish line. I said, sure, come on, man, let's go. Because it's what we do, you know, it's the runner's community. And you kind of, you know, help each other out. You see a guy struggling, you cheer him up, you know, like, come on, you can do this, you can make it. You know, don't give up. You know, those, you have people cheering, hoping, you know, helping you, you know, along the way. And I said, sure, I'll be happy to run with you, you know. And so, you know, the last mile, he started cramping up, you know, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. You know, and I'm running a good pace, right? And I'm like, should I stop and walk with him or should I just keep going? I'm like, I'm going to stop, you know. And so I stopped and walked him a little bit, you know, till the cramps left. And we got back and started running again. And we finished together. And he told his family that I stopped. And I was gracious enough to, you know, to help him along the way. And that's what you do in these kind of races. It's not – so you put your ego aside. You know, of course I could have ran a fast time, but I can always do that another time, you know. But I help someone that give them something for the rest of their lives that they can cherish with their kids, that, you know, to say, hey, you know, Roger ran with me and he stopped and walked with me. And, you know, so those kind of stories go a lifetime, you know, and it goes viral. So I like positive things like that, that you can change someone's life and make the world a better place. And that's what I try to do every day.
Yeah. Well, we got about 2 or 3 minutes left. Yeah, 2 or 3 minutes left. I would just like to say it was an honor to have you on our show. And anytime you want to come back, you're always welcome, even though you are a 49er and ruined my childhood.
I want to convert you, man. I want to convert you.
I've been working on it for a few years. At least
convert you as a Roger Craig fan. That's all. That's all I care.
Well,
you know, you have
well,
to
I've
be
always a been a Roger Craig fan. I've always been a Jerry Rice, Joe Montana fan. I just didn't like what y'all did to me. All right.
All right, man. Well, it was a pleasure talking to you guys. You know, Matt and Mike, you guys are awesome. And, you know, feel free to, you know, hit me up during the season, you know, whatever. Because, I keep, you know, tabs on what the league's doing and what players are doing, you know. So feel free to ever, you know, to call me back. It's all good.
All right. Thanks
really
a lot, Roger.
I appreciate that.
Hey, thank you, man. You guys have a good day.
You
thank
too.
You.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we've got another episode of The Grueling Truth on tap tomorrow night at 11 o'clock, where we'll have former University of Miami of Florida lineman Leon Searcy, who also played for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He was a Pro Bowler with the Jacksonville Jaguars in 1989. That should be a great interview. I know you're looking forward to that, Matt.
Yes, I am. I remember when he played for Pittsburgh and Jacksonville, and I also remember hearing a little bit more about his career on ESPN, and he was a very good lineman. I'm definitely looking forward to talking to him.
And Thursday night, we will have another special edition. We'll have Gary Jeter back on. He was on last week. We had some technical difficulties. He didn't get on until about 25 minutes into the show. Talked about his Uncle Bob's career with the Green Bay Packers. So we'll be able to talk to him. I mean, this is a guy that played with one of the greatest running backs of all time, Eric Dickerson, played with one of the greatest linebackers of all time, Lawrence Taylor. I know Mr. Jeter has a lot to say.
He sure does. I'm looking forward to getting his thoughts on the 85 championship game, and I also want to ask him some things about what LT was like when he first broke into the league.
Yep, me too. So we will see you guys tomorrow night at 11 o'clock on another episode of The Grueling Truth. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.
Me, but also you. The Pharaoh fast-forwards his favorite foreign film, Powder Donut. Okay, what's my line?
The only line I see here on the script is get options based on your budget with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive.
Oh, man, that's a tongue twister, huh? I'm sorry, I'm going to need a few more minutes. Bulbous Walrus, the Bulbous Walrus.
The Name Your Price tool, only from Progressive.
The owl and a fowl of the comatose coxswain.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's Sierra.